Mr. Rogers, Reel 8. Now, you're telling me how this provost, you know, the NCO reported to his provost officer.
The MP sergeant was telling the provost marshal that the officer, naval officer, was going to have me court-martialed because I won't let him have this man here that's just been transferred into the army. He's got his army papers here. I said, it's not in his jurisdiction. Oh. And with that, he said, you want the court-martial, my sergeant? He said, he refused. He said, never mind about that, he said. You can have him court-martialed because he's carrying out his proper duties. So this Commodore, you know, his face dropped. So the sergeant said, excuse me, sir, to his provost marshal. He said, actually, he should not be in this room. This is army room here. The other one is the Royal Navy. He said he should be in that office.
Okay.
Thanks. So he said, yes, sergeant, I think you're right. He said, sir, do you mind going into your own office across the hall? This is army. Don't you tell me what to do. He said, excuse me, sir, I'm a provost marshal. And my rank outranks you or anybody's rank. He said, either you go willingly, or you will go out under escort. He said, because I outrank you. Now, I might only be a captain, I outrank you. And that is when the officer had to, the naval officer had to go out with his tail between his legs. And that's when the provost marshal done about turn and walked away. I said, carry on, sergeant. And that's when the sergeant escorted me out of the room.
So which unit were you put in, or did you not know at that time?
Well, when I got transferred into the army, we were just put into the Buffs, the Royal East Kent Regiment, see? Then we got on to a train at Westcliff that took us up to Liverpool, but on the way out we stopped at Chalk Farm, and where the coach was, where we stopped, I could see my house where we lived, and I was talking to blokes who I knew on the railway I'd worked with. Then we went up to Liverpool, and from there we got a boat from Liverpool, took us over to Belfast, and from Belfast we went to Enniskillen, and we got a bus on train lines, I should say, to a place called Ely Lodge, and that's where
Ely Lodge.
Ely Lodge.
How do you spell that? Sorry.
ELGAR, I think. Ely. And let's call it. We done, I say, about 5 weeks.
Who were you joining there?
Pardon?
Who were you joining?
The Buffs, still the Buffs, the 9th Battalion of the Buffs.
9th Training Battalion?
Yeah, Training Battalion.
And what kind of training, what sort of reception did you get from them?
Well, they said...
joined them in about, it'd be about September when you got out there, wouldn't it?
Something like that, yeah. One thing they used to get up our nose was, they kept saying, now when you get into action... And, of course, that didn't go down very well with us. And now the sergeant we had was named Moore. And I never forget him because it came out the same time as that song, More and More. And, of course, every time we was off duty, we used to sing that when we knew he was around. He used to get very annoyed. And I was made Lance...
You were telling me about how you reacted to being told you hadn't been in action.
Well, we just a couple of us started burst out laughing. And because the ones who was saying it, they had no ribbons up. And when we got sunk and transferred into the army, they give us the first ribbon that was ever issued, that, you know, to put on our naval uniform, was the 3945 star. The ribbon, just the ribbon. Well, actually then it was the 3943 star. Then they altered it to 3944, then they altered it to 4546. And because when they started that, I was made Lance Corporal in charge of one particular section in the this and that. And, what's it called?
Now, why were you picked out as Lance Corporal, do you think?
Because, I don't know, it was because they liked my face, or it was a case that I knew all the drills and everything.
And what were your duties as Lance Corporal? Would you say your job was as Lance Corporal?
A gopher. Gopher this and gopher that. Do all the dirty work. See? And, you know, like, you would be running, as you be marching, say, doing the field marching, you'd be running up and down, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, you know, keep them in step, while the corporal, the full corporal, that's with two tapes, walked alongside there while you're doing all the dirty work, you know, then you'd be, have to go around and check their rifles, see if they've cleaned them properly and all that. Then the corporal would go and report to the sergeant, and the sergeant would come and have a quick look. Then sometimes the officer would have a look, you know. But I was unpaid. And when we come there...
Now, what about... how much did the army training differ from the naval training?
Only that it was exactly the same, bar the naval rifle training was different on board ship. And the rifle, the drill, what they do now with this new rifle, is the Navy's been doing it for hundreds of years. See... where you come to, for instance, Slope Arms in the army, you come to they say shunt, you come to attention. Slope Arms, you bring it up to your right, over to your left, 2, 3, down. In the Navy, you don't do that. You come up to the shoulder, to the right hand side, straight in front of you, and come down. And present, see, because on board ship, especially in the summer and in the foreign countries, they've got canopies, and if they come right up with a slope arm with more to present, you go through the canvas. That's the only difference, but all the other drills were the same.
And what about the weapons training?
Well, we were taught to use the rifle training was more or less the same as the Navy. But then they started showing us the Tommy gun, the Sten gun, the Boyd's anti-tank rifle, and the Piet.
And what did you think of those weapons? The Sten, for instance?
The Sten was an ugly looking thing, but it was more reliable than the American Thompson submachine gun. Or
what do you mean more reliable?
Well, for instance, on the Tommy gun, or as I say, the Thompson submachine gun, it's got a spring in it. It's about, if I say inch long, and about 3/16 an inch wide. If that went, the gun was no good. But with a Sten gun, if the big spring broke on that, all you had to do is take the back off it, get hold of the string, and pull it apart, pull it back in, shove the bolt back, and it's good enough for about another 4 or 5 magazines. See? That was, what's it called? Not only that, it was more comfortable for firing, what's it called, in front of you. Because when we got in Burma, and that, where the Sten butt used to come from, the actual Sten gun itself, our regiment used to cut half of that off. And put a wooden plate there, so you had it in front of you like that when you was on patrol. See, because if you turned, you were always on your target. See, but when it's at the side, and you throw something, you got to swing your whole body round. See, on the left side, you got to swing right the way round. These little things that happen, like the 2-inch. Oh, that's another thing we was taught, how to use a 2-inch mortar.
What do you remember of that?
Well, it was quite interesting because all it was, only a little thing you take it and put, more or less put it in your pocket. The barrel was about that long, about that round.
About a foot and by 3 inches.
Yeah, and no, about 2 inches.
And oh, it would be, yeah, sorry.
And the base plate was not about half the size of that, like that. And when you drop your bomb in it, you had a lever to fire it. And you could see that they do it all by hand, you know, like elevation and that. But with a 3-inch mortar, when you drop the bomb in, it fired automatically. See, and the base plate weighed about 3/4 of underweight. The barrel weighed near the same. And the tripod, oh, bloody awkward thing to carry. See, so you had 4 men on the 3-inch mortar, where with the 2-inch mortar, what's called it, everybody more or less had to be able to use it.
What about the Piat?
The Piat, oh, it's a pig of a gun.
Why is that?
Well, to cock it, you had to. Well, if you was waiting for a tank or anything to come along, and you had place, you had to put it on the floor, and it took all your strength to bring it up to cock it, because the spring was about that round and as thick as my finger. And it was like a melon, you know, these yellow melons, like that, with a point on the end of it, and the nose of it, I should say, and like a little bit of a fin at the back. And when you fired it, you was under fire and you fired it, you had to turn on your side to try and cock it. And I'll tell you what, there's not many people had a chance to cock it a second time, because it was so bloody hard. See, when you're standing up and pulling it, it's okay, but when you're laying down, you can't get the leverage. That's why when anybody, what's called it, so I said, do you want to take over the pier? No.
What about the Bren gun? You get that?
The Bren gun, yes.
What did you think of that?
Actually, it's a very accurate gun, but too accurate.
In what way?
Well, on single shot, you could see that little round calendar, green calendar there. You could hit that with a Bren at about 100 yards away from it on single shot. But if you put it on automatic, and by going like that with your finger, that's about 4 rounds gone. And if that first one misses, the other 3 misses. See, it was a good gun, but too accurate.
You wanted more of a spread in your fire.
Yeah, well, that's where everybody tried to get hold of a Sten gun, because it sprayed out like that.
Now, what about the boy's anti-tank rifle? What did you think of that?
That was another bloody thing. It was what? From about where you're sitting to here, long. And it's supposed to be had that armour-piercing shell in it. It's about a 0.5 Browning, but armour-piercing. And, oh, it was a pig of a thing. Didn't half have a kick on it and all. I don't think many of them used them in Burma, actually. Well, look, when we went there, joined the battalion in Burma, we never even saw a tank or anything.
Now, what about the only other thing is hand grenades? What about hand grenade training?
Well, we'd already had that. We've already had those. And
you'd had them before, yeah. But you didn't redo it. There's nothing new.
No
new types.
Yeah, the only thing that was new to us was the cup discharger. It was shaped like a cup like that, with a clamp either side of it, that you clamped onto a Lee Enfield rifle, but you turned it upside down. What I mean by that is, where you would have the rifle like that, you turn it that way, and had it like that. And you got your hand grenade, pulled the pin out of it, and slid it inside. See? Then you put it where you reckon the elevation would be. Then you wouldn't pull the trigger, you'd hit it with your finger. Because it had like a blank, powerful blank rifle, like a 12-shot gun. And that used to fire it, because we used to use it for snipers that was in the trees. See?
Any other weapons you remember, or new weapons or tactics?
Well, then they brought out the Mark 5, 4, 5 and 6 short the Enfields. They were smaller, but they had a kick on them if you didn't pull it well hard into your shoulder. One had we used to call it a 9-inch nail. That big used to stick on the end of the first number one shortly Enfield. Then the number two shortly Enfield had a proper bayonet, but that was only 9-inch of proper bayonet. Then the six had the pad, like a rubber pad, put on the end of the butt, so that protected your shoulder. But that as far as I got with those type of weapons.
Did you have a preference for any of those Lee Enfields?
I'll soon have the Mark III. Especially if you could get telescopic sights to go with it.
Now what about tactical training? How did you go on with that?
Well,
you know, advancing, attacking, defending, that sort of thing.
Well, it's something you either comes automatically, or what's called it? How can I put it? It's drummed into you by watching other people. For instance, when they say go, you might be walking along on a patrol, for instance, and you might spot something on the left. It could be an animal. It could be a Jap or the enemy.
Now you wouldn't do. Hang on, you wouldn't do this in Ireland, though, would you?
No, but I'm just saying...
What sort of training did you do in Ireland?
Well, the same sort of thing, but what you would do is you wouldn't have the grenades. See, as you're walking along and you spotted something that looked very, very suspicious, you'd walk past it, go down, get your grenade out, pull the pin out with a 3-second fuse, and you say, down, then throw. And it's drummed in at you, when they say down, don't look round for a pile of shit there. Don't look round, I'm not going to go in that. And I'm not kidding you. The sergeant used to come along, and he used to have a bloody big stick. And if you didn't get down fast enough, or like a lot of them do, they bend down, they've got their bleeding backside stuck up in the air, and you just go... They're not bloody hurt. You know, you couldn't do nothing about it, because if you reported him, you'd only finish up doing, fatigues or something like that.
Any other side of the training in the skilling area, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, we've done our training, mortar firing, on the mountains of Mourne. And the one who ever wrote that song, if we'd have got hold of him, we'd have lynched him.
Why?
We was on there 9 days, and 7 days of that was pouring a rain, and the old song where the mountains of Mourne sweep down to the sea, We had, used to pinch the cobblestones. Of course, we had duck boards to lay on, and we used to put them on duck, on stones, maybe 4 to 6 inches high, and still got wringing wet with the coming raining of it. Though we bivvy-act, like, you know, we was dry in front. If you laid on your back, you was dry in the front, but wringing wet at the back.
Now, how much more, you were there, how long were you there for? Five, 6 weeks?
Something like that.
That's all. So it was a short course. So you'd leave in October?
It would be round about November, I would say, because we just missed Christmas. We just missed Christmas when we got to India.
What do you remember about the voyage out then?
Pardon?
The voyage out, the journey out to India.
To India? Oh, that was very annoying as far as we were concerned. Doing rifle drill on there.
What ship was it? Do you remember the name of it?
One of the Castle lines, I forget now. The Empress Castle or something. Something like that.
And what were conditions like?
Oh, bloody awful. Because you were segregated so much. The officers had their one part of the ship. If there was any female staff there, they were segregated. The sergeants in the army and warrant officers had their thing. So we finished up in a small area. See? And when it started getting a bit choppy, because we used to stand up, being ex-Matlows, we used to stand up and go rolling round and round like that. And if they looked at you, just see how many of them would be over the side being sick.
Was it crowded below decks?
Yes, yeah. But see, there again, coming back to what I was saying about the, what's called it, minesweepers. Everybody rushed to get the one nearest to the deck, to the side of the ship. And of course, once you got that, had a number on it, and you had to keep to that number. Well, I always, two bunks back, two hammocks, because they had sling hammocks, always three from this side of the ship, because they always laughed, saying, you're supposed to be a sailor, because when she started rolling, going bang, bang.
Against the side, yeah.
And they finished up on the deck, sleeping on the floor or on the table, because we used to sling our hammocks above the mess tables.
What was the food like below?
Not bad at all, not bad at all.
And you were going out as a draft, were you? The whole of the 9th Training Battalion, it was just a draft, wasn't it?
Well, just a draft, yeah. I wouldn't say the old of the 9th.
That's what I mean, it's just a draft.
Well, let's put it this way. The other ship was filled of soldiers, sailors and airmen going out to the Far East. There was 150 of us from Enniskillen. There was 149 Navy and more Navy, and the rest was RAF, and one Marine made it 150. But so that's, you know, from the 9th Battalion that went.
And what sort of, did you do training on board? I mean, yeah, as you said it.
They tried the rifle drill, but they found out that that was all right in peacetime. The war hadn't finished. Hadn't finished in Europe then. See? So consequently, with all the soldiers sitting on deck doing rifle drill, if there was a, alarm would go off for enemy action. See? Blokes trying to get to their guns, trying to get here, trying to take up their positions. So they knocked that on head. They knocked it on head. So all we done, we was told to keep certain areas clear.
And which route did you go?
Well, I haven't the faintest idea.
Well, through the Mediterranean or around
South Africa?
We
went through the Suez. Went through the Suez Canal going. And that's the only time I've seen a troop ship go through the Suez Canal. As it's going through the Suez Canal, it was like that, going through.
Tilted.
There were so many troop ship blokes there on the ship, all wanted to look over this particular side, on the starboard side, going. Because there was more activity on that side than there was on the other side. See? Well, I can tell you because the wife, she's upset. The women used to lift their clothes up and say, shufti kush, shufti kush. That means you're going to be the other. Or the men would turn around and lift their arms, shufti bolprek, bol shufti kush. They're the first words you learn. You get it all the way through the Suez Canal. Then you've got the blokes coming up to you, especially you stop for so long, and they come up. Well, they try and get on board with all their wares, you know, selling this, selling that. So what the we was used to watch. There was a detachment of old soldiers there, and listen to them. They'd been in India before, so we used to watch them. They used to come up and they'd start bartering in. They spoke the lingo. They have these big baskets. And there'd be my wallets and things like that. And all of a sudden, they'd had to get off the boat. And of course, when they looked round, the baskets was empty. They'd been to the lot.
Now, what about after that, the heat, as you went through towards India? Because you wouldn't be used to that much. Did it bother you much?
Well, not really. Not really, because, don't forget, I think it took us 5 weeks, I think, to get out there. And I'm not kidding you, because we didn't go straight out, as people think. We were zigzagging. See? Like, for instance, when we came home.
No, stick to on your way out, yeah.
Well, our first real stop was Port Said. See? And then we carried on from there, right the way out to...
So you got used to the climate?
By the time we got to Bombay, we was used to it.
And what were your first impressions of Bombay?
Terrible.
Why?
On the flowers, nothing but all red patches. Because we didn't know what it was. It's where they were too beaten that and spit on the floor. And you got the arch there, which... People say the archway is the gateway to India. We found out that's wrong. That's the gateway of India. The gateway to India is the Khyber Pass.
And that's where you got off at Bombay, was it?
Yeah, that's where we got off before we went into Burma. Yeah.